Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are listening to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Shore. 72-hour non-stop protection, tested to the limits. Shore, it won't let you down.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the GAR, brought to you by Shure 72-hour protection. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Niall McIntyre, but I'm extra delighted because Niall, I know I don't mention this a lot on the podcast, but I would be from Tyrone, big Tyrone fan. And I know I never bring it up. I don't like to make the show about me, Lee Costello. But I'm extra delighted because to my right is one of the greatest players to ever wear a Tyrone jersey, to ever play the game, Stevie O'Neill. How's it going?
I'm not too bad, Lee. Glad to be here.
Excellent to have you. Genuinely buzzing here because Tyrone v Kerry, that's the draw, happened this morning. How do you feel about it?
I'm excited. Looking forward to the game now next weekend, and especially now Tyrone are starting to show that bit of form that makes them feared. And I think it's going to be a massive, massive game.
Yeah, I mean, for some reason, the green and gold of Kerry definitely seem to bring out the best in Tyrone. So it's good reason to get excited for that. Obviously, you know, there's maybe opposition out there that wouldn't pose the same threat as like a David Clifford, but you're thinking if every Tyrone are going to get going, it might as well be against Kerry and in a quarter final.
Yeah, listen, it's do or die now. And I think, you know, after the round robin games, you know, even the weekend's action was so exciting, and all the games that we watched. And, you know, Tyrone and Kerry, it's turned into one of those big rivalries. And I'm sure the whole country's looking forward to seeing the match on Saturday or Sunday.
That's it. Well, you say it's turned into a big rivalry, and a lot of that's your fault, to be fair. 2003, 2005, 08, you know, those big games. Tyrone always seemed to come out on top of those games, but they were also always the underdog. Do you feel like a familiar sort of, is there similarities between now and then?
I think there is. You know, I'm sure Kerry have a lot to prove, and they'll be under a lot of pressure because of the game 2 years ago when Tyrone caught them in the semi-final. So I think Kerry's under a lot of pressure, and they're going in as favourites. They're earning champions, and they have an awful lot to lose. And I feel Tyrone are coming in, you know, a lot of criticism from last year and even criticism this year. But I feel that they've gradually just started to show form. Some of their key men are starting to get into the form that made them earning champions a few years back. So I feel it just has all the ingredients just to be an amazing festival of football, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the likes of David Clifford, Sean O'Shea, and up against Darragh Canavan, Darren McCurry. You know, you've some of the best forwards and best defenders on show on both sides.
No, definitely there's a lot of promise in that game, and we are going to get you to help us review the weekend past there. Some crazy results, crazy matches and talking points, but we're going to talk a little about your career as well and just sort of starting out. But you're still kicking balls, still selling dummies?
Well, still kicking a wee bit. I played a wee bit of reserves last year for the club and that, and playing with over 40s and that, so it is. So listen, it's a bit of fun, training one or two nights a week and a wee game with every couple of weeks. And so it's just trying to keep the weight off as best I can.
Are you still able to sell the dummies at this age?
in my head. The legs aren't just working as quick as they used to. So, no, listen, it's about enjoyment and a bit of camaraderie. Like, you know, you're playing with some of the boys that I played with the 20 years ago, and playing with a lot of good club players that I would have played against. So it's nice to meet them lads and establish a good relationship with them too, the over 40s.
Yeah, just on that, you're talking about the over 40s. That's the Tyrone Masters, the county level for the over 40 players. Who else involved with the Tyrone team at the minute that we would know about?
Well, Conor Garvey, obviously, you know, if Kieran Gourlay would have played a wee bit, Owen Bradley, who would have played in the Tyrone team around 05. Just trying to think now, yeah, it was Cormac McAnallan's brother, Donald, would be there. Just trying to think of other
Sean
players.
That,
you know, Sean yeah, obviously this one. Year. Sean's a big addition this year, but there's a lot of boys that would have played in the Tyrone panel. Marty Penrose now is the age, but he's still playing club football.
Yeah, Mark Donnelly,
still playing there, and we're trying to get them boys out, but we have had no joy yet. Big Joe McMahon, we're trying to get him out, but I suppose he's busy now coaching the senior team, so it's hard for him to get out.
Would it be laid back, Stephen, or do you take it, like, do you train hard at?
Oh, listen, no, it's laid back and it's enjoyable. You know, you train is one night a week up in Gervahe on a Wednesday night, and, you know, training's tough. You worked hard. The Leonards have definitely, you know, put you through your paces, but it's enjoyable. It's a kickabout, and, you know, I don't think anybody takes it too serious at that stage, at that age.
Yeah, I mean, like, you sort of talked about players coming out or they haven't retired yet, and you'd be sort of a man for coming out of retirement a couple of times now. But back in 2008, you were only 28 years old and you retired from the county setup, at least because of injury. So it's sort of mad to think now, you know, in your 40s that you're able to play. Like, how did you overcome those injuries? What was it in 2008 that was wrong?
I had a lot of problems in 2006 and 7 with knee issues. I had tendonitis in my knee, and it was nothing I was doing was getting to the better of it. I was doing everything. Louis O'Connor, physio at the time, had me doing lots of different stuff, ice baths. There was blood injections, trying to get it repaired, but I was getting no joy with it. You know, the pain just was serious, and it was shutting down the pain. It was shutting down then the muscles on my quad and that, and I was getting no power, and, you know, even lifting my leg into the bed, like, I had just no power just to do certain wee simple movements. Driving was an issue. And I just felt that I was doing myself no good and the team no good, and I got a bit fed up with the injury. So I'd retired in 2008, the end of 2007, 2008. I told Mickey that I had enough and I couldn't go on. And I was sitting at home trying to play a club football and that, and it wasn't going well either. I couldn't get moving, so I just started cycling, and through just cycling it just helped strengthen up the leg and got me back playing again, and that's basically it. Like, and I kept at the cycling then whenever I was, even after a wait, all the way through until I'd retired in 2014, I just kept it up because it just helped keep the knee strong and the muscles around the quads and that strong, and that's what got me playing again.
So that got you back into club football at least, but then your form must have been particularly brilliant because Tyrone were going so well, got all the way to an All-Ireland final, and they were still looking you back. Like, how did that manifest itself?
I just started playing, but whenever I got the knee back, and I was cycling for 3 or 4 months, and I started then getting back into playing for the club and that, I started playing well, obviously, there was a few people that would have came down to club training to see if I would entice. Mickey came down one time to where I was working at the time in Gorchin and spoke to me about it, and I just felt at the time, it was a bit too late, and I wasn't just sure if, the injury was 100% healed up, and I was only back playing at that stage. Brian Quinn from Rockwell came down, Francie Martin from Carrickmore came down, and Francie had actually asked me to go up and speak to Mickey, and he wouldn't leave the bloody house until I'd agreed to go and speak to him. So I went and I met Mickey and Tony and Fergal. And I said, look, definitely come back next year. Can't come back this year. It's an Ireland final and just be too upsetting for maybe the players and things like that. And they says, well, leave it with the players to choice. And I says, oh, that's fair enough then. So the players, they had a meeting then on the Wednesday night, and they decided then that they were happy for me to return. And that was basically it.
Yeah.
Looking back on it, I probably shouldn't have, because if the result hadn't went our way, I'd have been a complete scapegoat and been a disaster. So, but listen, luckily the result went our way, and that's it.
But in that way, you maybe took the pressure off some of the players, you know, and they could just focus on the All-Ireland final.
Funny end, McGinley would have often said that whenever we'd be very friendly, and he had said that, you know, it was great because even I think Paul Galvin had issues with the referee in one of the earlier games that year, and
he slapped the book out of the hand.
He slapped the book out of the hand, and he was only back then from his suspension for that game. And then I suppose then the whole focus was on me returning and him returning. And Andy says it was great for us because it took the pressure off us. We just focused on our football and our training, and that was basically it.
Yeah, and it was. Is it true that was it Owen Mulligan stood up and said something about getting you back in particular?
Aye, well, listen, I wasn't part of that meeting. I don't know what went on, but I heard Muggsy had stood up and said, "Look, Stevie's one of us." And I suppose Owen and me played minor football from '97, and he stood up and he said, "Look, lads, we, you know, this is about the team winning," and that was basically it. And I think Owen would know me. I wouldn't be back just for my own sake. If I was fit and able to be there, I would have been there. But that was I think Owen at the meeting.
Yeah, it's particularly powerful that, because actually I think people sort of forget that year Owen wasn't starting, you know, and if you were coming back, then obviously that's another competition, you know, probably less game time for him, and it actually did prove out to be that way. But that it says a lot about his mentality in terms of team first.
I can safely say any of them boys that I would have played with from minors all the way through and under 20s and that was sort of the thinking. There was no egos. Everybody was there for the good of the team and the thrown cause. And you know, I honestly can look back at those times and says there was no boys that were just all in it for themselves. Mm-hmm. There were some of them were the best players I've ever seen play the game, and they were just great lads, great teammates, and brilliant footballers. And all it was about getting the result at the end of the day.
I just remember I was on the bus on the way to school. I must have been about 15, and I went to an integrated school, so not everyone in that school was particularly engrossed in the GAA or understood what happened. But I sat next to a fella and he knew nothing about the sport. He knew I was crazy about it, and he was like, "Do you see this big player's coming back for Tyrone for the final? A forward, he scores all the time or something." And he's like, who? And he's like, "I don't know, he's a legend though. I can't remember his name." And I got off the bus and I was like, "I can't believe Peter Canavan's coming back for this final." But I was still delighted when I heard it was you, and delighted in how things turned out. But we'll move on now, because Tyrone beat Donegal, and it's a big rivalry, Niall. Maybe not as intense this time around than in previous years.
Probably not, I suppose. Yeah, Donegal have probably, do you know, they've had a very stop-start year, and I suppose it was kind of it ended as the year had gone today with the news that Aidan O'Rourke has stepped down as the Donegal manager. So, do you know, it's just been a very topsy-turvy sort of a year for Donegal. It never really got going for them, and while that rivalry is huge, coming into the game, I always had the belief that Tyrone would pull it out. And I suppose we've seen a lot of teams last week. Mayo struggled against Cork. Galway struggled. And Tyrone struggled against Westmead, very surprisingly. But I suppose, like it affected Mayo on Sunday, it gave Tyrone, I suppose, the little push that they needed. And I suppose that everyone would agree that looking at that game on Saturday, that was Tyrone's best performance of the year, all over the field, but especially in the attacking positions, the two Canavans, Matty Donnelly. I'm sure we're going to talk about them all, but Tyrone, a lot of people talk about them kind of waiting in the long grass, and they pounce, and they seem to be coming with a run at the right time now, and that was definitely their best performance of the year so far.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was a performance overall, because there have been flashes of brilliance, but they've been sort of, I don't know, you know, it didn't seem to get 70 minutes in them, but on Saturday they seemed to rectify that, Stephen.
Yeah, definitely. They get, you know, right from the first throw-in, everybody was at it. You know, you seen the intensity that Rory Canavan and Darragh Canavan brought to their tackling on the forward line, and it just reminded you nearly of the Tyrone team of old, where they were just so aggressive and so in Donegal's face. They had no time in the ball. There were periods of that first half where Donegal couldn't even get out of their own half. Such was the tackling and ferocity of it. So, no, Tyrone were on the money, and you know, for the first time probably in 2 years, they gave 70 minutes where they were controlled the game, and they were brilliant going forward. Some of their play, like they can play high ball in, they can play low ball in, they have runners, and it was a very, very impressive performance. And and you go to Balbuffet, it's, you know, when you count their home, it's a big result.
Mm-hmm. And I was joking earlier that I thought Peter Canavan was coming back, but in some ways, you know, over 10 years down the line, we've got two Canavans now. You know, we're spoiled for choice. They're unbelievable.
They are. You know, you've seen and heard so much about them on underage circles around Tyrone, and you've seen glimpses of some of the stuff that they could do, you know, but they do the basics so well, and then they have them in their locker, then the genius moments where, you know, the Derek Canavan's point, the left foot, where he came in off the sideline, it was just brilliant and great to watch. And whenever you have players like that there, you know, suddenly you run out of man markers that can handle those players, and it puts a lot of pressure on defenders trying to get, you know, a 2v1 opportunity to get the tackle on, because you don't want to leave any man isolated with that type of pace and directness that those boys possess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you obviously played with a father, and you mentioned that point there from the sideline, and even just their movement, the jinkiness, the low centre of gravity, the way they bounce and turn, like, do you see, you know, like, similarities there?
Oh, you definitely see similarities. You know, the three Canavans aren't blessed with height, but, you know, with everything else, they have everything else they're blessed with. Everything else, the pace, the power, the balance. You know, I think Derek Canavan got a point one time where in the first half, where he sort of was running, and he slowed down and he just went again, mm-hmm. and left Jamie Brennan, somebody who's very quick as well, just sitting and tapped it over the bar. And, you know, Tyrone are blessed to have that type of forward power, along with Darren McCurry and Matty Donnelly playing some brilliant football again this year. It asks a lot of questions of the opposition defence, and I'm sure Jack O'Connor and Paddy Talley and the boys down in Kerry will definitely be concerned about having the backup to deal with all that.
Absolutely, and I'll go to Niall on this, because there might arguably be a Tyrone bias here with us too. So you can tell us yourself, Derek Canavan, like, how highly do you rank him just from a neutral?
Well, I suppose last year everyone was talking about David Clifford and Shane Walsh as being like these are the top forwards in the game, and these are the two best lads. But looking at this year, like, you'd have to say that Derek Canavan, with the consistency that he's brought, and, you know, how amazing it is to watch as well, similar to Shane Walsh in that All-Ireland final. Like, Derek Canavan is doing this. He's done it most days this year, and it's been the most consistent that we've seen him. Stephen mentioned earlier the kind of extra bite and from the forwards, and the extra, you know, the boys are putting in this, no defender is going to get out easy. And I suppose you can see that particularly in Dara, and seeing it last week against Westmead. We were talking about him getting stuck into Kevin Maguire. He kind of looks like a new man this year in that sense, Stevie.
They do, and one thing that I enjoy watching, you know, they're playing with a smile on their face. Mm-hmm. You know, they miss a shot, they're just smiling. You can see some boys giving them a wee bit of jip on the way out, and it doesn't even faze them. You know,
that was the McMenamin one at the start.
Yeah. And it doesn't faze them. And
really finds it hilarious. Like, he's properly in stitches.
Just smiling, he says, because, you know, they have that confidence that they know that 9 times out of 10 will go for the bar, and you can see the hunger and desire. They want to get the next ball to get the shot away. So it's great to see that there's boys playing with a smile on their face, and you know, it reminds you a wee bit of Ronaldinho maybe whenever he was playing. They always said about him and the flashes of genius that he would have had in soccer and that. And, you know, to me, watching them two boys, they can do the unexpected, and that's what, you know, as soon as they get that ball, you can see the crowd getting on edge, because they know that they're going to have a cut and take their man on and produce something.
Would Peter have been the same way, kind of playing with the smile on his face that way?
No, he was just aggressive and angry all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think, because even, that is probably a difference, Dara, like, you know, he swings the arm in the air and he goes to the crowd and he gives it a big cheer. Like, you wouldn't really have seen too much of that from Peter. Even when he scored that goal in the All-Ireland final, it was just a little finger in the air. Very noble.
Peter, you know, the same type of player, just that, you know, he could do the flashes of brilliance, and he was just so calm under pressure. So, listen, the way people celebrate and the way they go on the pitch, it's up to them. Like, but, you know, I think the way they're carrying themselves at the minute, it's great to watch, and they're role models for any young forward growing up, you know, to play with a smile on your face, but bring the stuff that every coach and every team wants, the tackling, the intensity, and showing for the ball and taking men on. And I just think they're great role models, and you know, we have a few of them on display this weekend.
Mm-hmm. And just with Dara, because the kind of form that he's in, you know, he sort of looks like he can't miss. He wants to take every man on. He's got literally no fear. He's just in that, what they call it, flow state. But you were in a similar reign of form in 2005. You know, you were just unstoppable that year. You got player of the year, scored 10 points off Francis Bellew, who's probably the most feared fullback there is in it. What's it like to be in that zone, you know, that like I just feel like I can beat anyone here today and there's no one in the country that can stop me. And I know you're going to take a real modest approach here now, but that is what you were doing and that's what Darragh Canavan's doing now. How does that feel going into games?
It's the best feeling in the world. You don't want the game to end. You want to keep going and going, and you're nearly disappointed when the final whistle comes because you just want to get on the ball so many times because you feel you can do things and you can do things for the benefit of the team. So I would say that the way the games are now and they're coming every week, if they're not picking up injuries, they just want that more game time and you feed off that buzz from the crowd and the noise and. It's just the best feeling in the world, and I'm sure them boys are really looking forward to getting to Croke Park, as are the Kerry lads that will pose that their biggest challenge this year.
I'm glad you say Croke Park because it'll be interesting to see like a Rory Canavan in there because he's so unorthodox and he's still got that courage and the ignorance of youth kind of thing. You know, like you've seen his dummy and just in the opening minutes around the keeper. I so wish that goal had went in, but then 2 minutes later he sticks it into the back of the net. I just think with the wide space of Croke Park and the crowd and the atmosphere, it's all set up for him. I know I'm just putting pressure on them now, but like it's just set up so brilliantly. I'm just super excited.
No, listen, I think everybody is excited about it. Croke Park is the place where you want to be, and if for all good players, if you can't play in Croke Park, you're not at that top level. And those boys are at that top level. You know, the bounce of the ball, the speed of the game, just everything increases in Croke Park. You have the wide open spaces and it's where all it's the only place you want to be. And, you know, if every game was in Croke Park, every player in the country would be happy to drive down and travel there every weekend, you know. So it'll be great to see it, I think we should be keeping a wee bit more pressure on Kerry now.
Right.
They have a lot.
They are the All-Ireland champions.
All-Ireland champions. Yeah. An awful lot to lose. You know, Tyrone's just gone down there to make up the numbers and try their best. But
of course.
I'm looking forward to the game and to see Rory Canavan, David Clifford, Shawnee O'Shea, see these players playing. It's going to be a great weekend.
Absolutely. And then another player who's been shining the light for Tyrone up front for so many years is Darragh McCurry. And it sort of feels like the attention isn't on him anymore. You know, Darragh Canavan's taken on that mantle a little bit more, but not exactly someone you can just leave on mark now.
No, and you can't leave any Tyrone forwards unmarked, really, the way they're going at the minute. Like, you have the two Canavans, you have McCurry, you have Matty Donnelly there. You have so many lads who are, if you give them any space whatsoever, that these boys are going to punish you. Mm. So I suppose that's a worry for Kerry coming into the game. And it was something that Donegal just couldn't cope with at the weekend, that there was bullets coming from all angles. So it's obviously a huge positive for Tyrone people. And, you've backs coming up scoring as well. Conor Myler can score. Michael McKernan kicked a score or two at the weekend. So... there's a great attacking threat there,
yeah.
And it's going to take a great like defensive performance to keep them all out. And I suppose Kerry have been a little bit open at times this year, so Tyrone will definitely test every last bit of that next weekend.
I will be worried about Paddy Talley. He's in Kerry. Like, no one will know Tyrone better than him. No one will know more about how we would try to set up. And Kerry have never, for all the times that like Tyrone have managed to sort of ambush Kerry, and let's make no secret about it, like Kerry are obviously the favourites going into this game. They are the All-Ireland champions. And if you could David Clifford, you're just automatically a favourite. But this time they have a Tyrone man on board, and it'll just be that little bit harder. What does Paddy Talley bring to Kerry?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have Paddy coaching me back in 2003. And, he's a top-class coach. And, he's just a lovely fella. He's just a complete gentleman, he will bring that in-depth knowledge. He'll have worked a lot of those boys too, even at St Mary's and seen them at university, so he'll have in-depth knowledge. But listen, he go to that level of the game. Tyrone will have their work done on Kerry. Everybody knows Kerry. Everybody knows Dublin. You know all those top teams, the Galways, the Mayos, the Roscommons. Every team now has so much data and statistics on players that you know what you're going to face, you know what foot they'd prefer with, you know the patterns of play that they want to be doing in games, and each team now is trying to stop that and disrupt that. So, listen, having that inside knowledge is grand. You still depend on the players to go out on the pitch and put in place the game plan and things like that. And obviously, whenever you're playing against a good opposition, they're going to try and disrupt that. So it'll all come down to, who wants it the most, who doesn't make the mistakes, and who expresses himself best maybe at the weekend. And Paddy will have his knowledge. But, you know, you look at Brian and Fergal, they have a great backroom team there. They'll have their homework done on those Kerry lads as much as what Kerry will have done on Tyrone.
Mm-hmm. And then just last thing on Tyrone, me and Niall were talking there about Darren McCurry. I always remember the 2013 season, you were captain that year, sort of the focal point up front. And then you had Darren McCurry, he's like the youngster, he's only 19, 20, something like that. But he was shooting the lights out that year as well, and we all really expecting this long and successful career. And it has panned out that way, maybe not as straightforward as you would have thought back then. But what was he like back then? And did you know that he was always going to be the player that he became?
Yeah, I can remember the first time Darren came into the panel, you know, the different stages, Mickey would have brought in different players, you know, just to fill out maybe teams and training games, and even just to have a look at lads up against the county lads. And I remember his first training session in Clougher, and he was marking Conor Gormley, so that was a baptism of fire for him. And he finished with about 1-5. So he did. So as soon as that happened, everybody, you know, Connor was our best marker by a mile for so many years. And once that happened, we, you know, you suddenly said, Jesus, boy can play. And you know, he's going on to do greater things. And he's just a great lad, brilliant fella around the dressing room. You know, he's full of bubbliness and confidence, and confidence in a nice way. And, you know, he can take a joke and he can give it. And he's just a great lad. And we never had any doubt that he was going to be on to be one of the top forwards in Ireland and to ever represent Tyrone, and he's shown that. You know, I think he's a great role model for any youngster. He always would be practicing right, left foot, he takes pride in his game and in his fitness work. You know, he's constantly at the top of some of the fitness tests, or most of the fitness tests that the Tyrone boys would be doing. So he's just a great role model, doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, and just a real example for any young footballer.
No, he definitely is. We'll take a quick break now to look at the Shure No Sweat Quiz. In partnership with our friends at Shure, the official statistic partners of the GAA, we're now going to look at the most eye-catching stats from the championship weekend. Last week we asked you which manager was the longest serving at intercounty level. Sean Holland got the correct answer, which was of course Kieran McGeaney in Armagh. Now looking at last weekend, where Meath and Down both booked their place in the Tailteann Cup final, we want to know when was the last time these two teams met in the All-Ireland final. So now it's up to you, our audience, to give us the answers of the stat-related question on our social media to be in with a chance to win in some Shure themed prize. Prizes will be announced on the show next week. Good luck. Okay, welcome back. We're firmly going to put the Tyrone hype to bed now. I maybe overdid it there a little bit. I'm actually nervous.
We got excited.
Yeah, we definitely did. I shouldn't have had coffee or anything this morning. I'm going to be all over the Kerry dressing room walls. But the big game of the weekend was definitely Galway Mayo. Niall, I mean, Galway are out of the championship. But it's so strange to think.
I was thinking about it all week. Just the last few weeks, you've just been thinking Mayo, when they beat Kerry early on, Galway, they started so well all year. That game, losing to Armagh, was their first loss all year. Apart from the Mayo League final loss. And you just think Galway, they haven't been in the final last year. You think Galway are, you know, they're building and they're coming again. And it was just unbelievable to think that they're going to be knocked out before the quarterfinals, one of these teams. But Mayo, do you know, they've done it now, and I couldn't believe this stat this morning, that it's the fourth time in the last 5 years that they've knocked Galway out of the championship. Mayo, what it boils down to is that Galway, when they had the win in the first half, they missed too many chances, and they missed, Shane Walsh missed three frees, one from play, Paul Connery had a few wides, they hit some bad wides, and Mayo, they had them level within, 10 minutes of the second half starting. And I suppose then Mayo had the work done at that stage. We saw how strong the wind was in that second half. It was a complete gale and nobody could really shoot into it. You had to get very close, nearly inside the 21 to score. So Mayo were in control for the last 25 minutes of that game. And while it was only a 1 point defeat, you know, it would have taken something special for Galway to get that point late on. So brilliant performance from Mayo.
No, it is, yeah, and it's all the more special because of the way they managed to come back, because they were really disappointing in the first half. Galway were completely in control.
They were, you know, I felt the Galway should have probably won the game, or been the game should have nearly been out of sight at halftime if they'd have taken those chances. I felt that Comer going off two at halftime was a massive blow, because he's such a focal point for them. You know, his power, his pace and his strength, you know, you miss a player like that, you know, and he's one of the big leaders for Galway. So fair play to Mayo. They looked dead and buried for periods of that first half. They were just, you know, all over the shop. But, you know, their main man stood up. I thought Paddy Durkin was super. He had a great point. And even his tackle back in Tierney, the time Tierney was running through, and, you know, the ground that he covered up, like, he just played a real captain's part. And, you know, even the changes, young Conroy coming on, made a difference with the pace and power that he has. And it was a good second half from Mayo. And you know, the Dubs will just be a wee bit wary of them, you know, especially the rival that they've established over the years.
You mentioned Conroy there starting instead of, is it James Carr? I think it was dropped for him. He's sort of been like a super sub all season, and he's coming on and he is making things happen. But the problem nearly there is, then if you do really well, I'll get a starting place. But actually the manager thinks, oh, he's brilliant to bring on. Do you know? And he sort of get caught between these two places, but he finally did get his start, and, you know, he probably justified that decision in the end. Have you ever been in that situation where you're sort of stuck between that super sub role or trying to break in?
Aye, listen, it's, I think especially in the modern game anyway, and at their county level, you need to have two or three men that can be brought on that can change the flow of the game. And push on the rest of the team, you know, because you know you can't rest in your laurels and you have that type of quality sitting on the bench. So I was in that position myself. It's not a nice position to be in, where you're viewed as coming on to change the game, but it's an awfully important role. You think of Callum McShee in there a few years ago whenever he was coming on for Tyrone, and you know, what a nightmare to be coming on 50 minutes into a game where, you know, you're tired, the fullback's tired, and you've somebody coming on chomping at the bit to get on the ball and to attack you. So it's definitely a key role in the modern game, and I think, you know, the team with the strongest bench will be one of the favourites for the All-Ireland. And you look at Dublin, whenever so many of their great players had retired and finished, they struggled on the bench. And even Tyrone last year, a lot of boys had stepped away, and that quality just wasn't the same. So it's good for Mayo to have that type of competition, I think.
Yeah, they definitely have the depth, and Kevin McStay is really keen to use it. He made four changes, and he said that none of them were to do with injuries, but, I mean, it's hard to tell, really. I was particularly surprised now that Matthew Ryan was dropped, and then I was really, really surprised that he wasn't brought on at half-time, because they'd hardly won any of their own kickouts. I think Galway won 9 of Mayo's kickouts, something crazy like that. You know, they looked very lacking in the skies. And that's his strength, surely, you know?
Yeah, Majoran has been, he's been the key man, sure, wasn't he? A Footballer of the Year nominee there 2 years ago. And, you know, he's had a good start to the year this year. I suppose, God knows why he wasn't starting. Maybe there was something like an illness. I know Páirc Ó'Hara was out with an illness. Kevin McStay said that after the game. But in fairness to Mayo, they were well able to do it without him, and you couldn't criticise any of the tactics that they had yesterday. Dermot O'Connor was in midfield yesterday, and what a performance, lads. And I'd often be raving about this man, just that the work rate that he has, the fitness that he has, above all else, he just never ever stops. And I think yesterday was nearly the best example of that you'd ever see from Dermot O'Connor, because he was just everywhere, all over the field. There was one stage, I think it was the start of the second half, he wins a ball down at his own backline, and he's the one then giving the final pass for the score. Lee Keegan said afterwards that this man is the ultimate teammate. He'd do anything for you on the pitch, and, you know, you can see that from him. And I suppose that was the kind of spirit that won it for Mayo, you know, driving forward when they got these breaks. And I suppose as well as that, like we were talking, with the loss of Lee Keegan, with the loss of Oisín Mullen, you think Mayo are losing this threat from deep, and then David McBrien pops up with that goal. Kevin McSay said after that he'd been telling them all year that, I knew you have this in you, David. Yeah. I don't think too many others had seen it, but it was brilliant from him, and just shows that Mayo, you know, that Mayo kind of drive from the back, they still have it.
It's just in their DNA, isn't it? But it really was some finish, Stephen. Like, it was he gave him the A's and everything.
Aye, it was a class move. So it was, you know, just the wee 1-2, and I'm surprised how many times them type of wee moves are on, and Mayo took it to their full advantage. But no, it was a great finish, because once you're going through at that pace, to have the calmness to give the A's and to send the keeper the wrong way, it is a high skill level, so it is. So you know, Kev McStay says he has it on him. He'll be looking to more of it now, so he will.
Yeah, absolutely. The standard is set. Matthew Tierney was through in a very similar situation, probably actually an easier chance in some regards. Now, you're hearing people saying he should have tucked it around him, maybe was an option. Obviously, it's all in real time and it's a lot faster than that. But I want to know, is that, maybe I just watch too much soccer, but is the little chip when you're going a pace and the goalkeeper's coming out of you, is that not a viable option?
It is. But you miss it.
You're the worst in the world.
You're the worst in the world. And like, as I said, there is a wild skill level to have. You know, you just nearly need to have that killer instinct. And, you know, as a forward going through, you know, you're under serious pressure with the defender. Maybe you can even feel him coming and you can feel him tugging at your jersey. And your initial reaction is just get the shot away quick in case you get blocked down. And I suppose looking back on it, you know, Tierney had maybe the chance to bounce it or to take it round the keeper because the keeper went down that wee bit early. So, listen, it's split-second decisions and it's definitely not an easy place to get a chance in. But, you know, your top forwards, it's a skill that should be practiced. And it's definitely a tough one to do whenever you only have that split second to make up your mind.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, you've got so many famous shots. You were telling me earlier that you're not on social media, and I say it's funny because you're all over social media. There's so many clips of you. Most famously, that one in Kildare with the dummy. But is there any moments like that haunt you? You know, where it's like, I definitely should have done better or got that shot away.
No, you remember your mistakes more than the good things that you did. And there's definitely things that you regret. And you look back and you think, geez, why did I do that? Or why did I not just calm down and do something else? But listen, It's like anything, you make a mistake, you have to live with it and get on with it and get the next ball. And I suppose, as we alluded to the Canavans there, playing with a smile on your face. And for any young player, forget about a mistake, just get the next ball. And that's what we'd be telling our own young ones that we're coaching at home.
Is the taking around the keeper, is it particularly difficult finish to kind of, like when it is in such a tight moment and such a split second, it does seem a very difficult skill to execute. Like you could just confuse yourself a bit, like even Owen McLaughlin did the time the goal was disallowed. I know he wasn't taking around the goalie, but he just kind of lost his foot.
It's definitely a tough skill, so it is. And I suppose it depends on the keeper too, because obviously if the keeper stands up big and doesn't commit and really puts the pressure on you, then to decide, right, are you shooting or are you taking him on? And I think that can affect it. So it does, you know, but It's a tough skill. There are certain players that are good at it. I found shooting for goals, I was never great at it. And there were many times I was through, maybe within the 14-yard line, and I just drove the ball. And I should have been better maybe placing it or taking it around the keeper. And it's a skill that I never had. You know, you look at Muggsy was brilliant at it. Like, he would have sold a wee dummy and always very, very calm. You know, you look at Rory Canavan's, the wee dummy he sold with three men around him and it nearly came off for him. So there's certain players who have that killer instinct. It's something I definitely didn't have.
I think you did all right. Taking around the keeper, sorry, just because it sort of dawned on me as well. I think people are like, you should have just tucked it around and it's as simple as that. And I think they're thinking nearly like in soccer terms, that's the keeper beat and it's an open net. But if the defenders are chasing you down at speed, they're just going to fill that net. Do you know, so you've no sooner tucked it around the keeper, now they're the keeper, and it's Gaelic football, everyone can use their hands, do you know. So I just don't know if it was as obvious as people are maybe making it out to be. Like, it was, I was the one that said it was probably an easier chance, but it was pretty tough.
The key is the defenders, you know, coming at you. You know, whenever you know that they're chasing you and they're coming, you know you only have that split second, you know, whereas the Mayo goal, you know, the fullback just drove through and probably knew that he had that wee bit of space and time, you know. Whereas as a forward, you're marked that wee bit more tighter. But if you get a run from deeper, you feel that you have more time for it.
Do you think Galway are victims of the new format? Because I think of something like, I suppose actually Tyrone's a good example in the sense that they're maybe the beneficiaries of this format because they get second chance after second chance. And when you've got the players they've got, eventually you're going to play into form, you know, and tinker and get things right. But then you've Galway, who were getting things right pretty much all year, you know, all the through league final, provincial championship, they won it. They won two out of three of their group games. You know, 90-80% they were on top of things. But because of all the games, so many injuries started to pile up. You know, Sean Kelly, he left the thing with his foot in a boot. Demi Comer had to come off injured. There was just, like, it caught up with him.
I think it comes down to the managers now trying to time the run. And you know, I always, you sort of look at Dublin and Kerry and you think, right, they're going through their championship, their provincial championship. They can time their run nearly, because even if they're only playing 70-80%, they're still going to win their provincial championship nearly. Whereas in Connacht and Ulster, like, you have to be on top. You know, you have Roscommon, you have Mayo, you have Galway, you know, Sligo. They'll give you a game any day of the week. You know, up in Ulster too, there's so many teams that are so strong. So you have to be on form. But I think a lot of the managers now are trying to build in where they're planning. The strength and conditioning boys will be trying to get them topped up and to get them peaking at the right time. And you know, it's a long season, and especially in the county season, them boys are finished now. They're playing club football all the way through to November time maybe, and then they're starting them back training with their county teams and that. And it's a long, long season, and I think it's important maybe for managers even to think about putting in a wee break there and keep things fresh and keep lads, you know, just topped up enough that come the business end of the championship that they're ready to go.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the players now who's maybe obviously didn't have the best game yesterday, but no one really knew too much about an injury concern, was Shane Walsh. He was doing things like, he was taking free kicks from central positions and he was taking them off his left, and people were like, why is he not taking them off his right? He's right footed. But we know ourselves when he came on to the show last week, and it's all credit to him that his foot was actually in a boot. He asked us not to make a fuss out of it, don't mention it, don't show it in the pictures or the camera. So he'd been nursing an injury, I think he told us, since the Tyrone game. Do you know, and just managing that the whole time, and no one even knew that. So, I mean, there's more to it than just, you know, what we can see and players not performing.
Yeah, sometimes you can be watching a lad and you're thinking, why is this lad not playing well? Like, he's so good and it's just not working for him. And you can start giving out about him. You're like, his head's not in the game. He doesn't look right. And then I suppose sometimes there is just stuff happening behind the scenes where there's something wrong with the lad. And when we met Shane last week, he walked across the road in the boot, and I was thinking, like, you didn't know there was anything wrong with this lad. And I suppose nobody really knew there was anything wrong. I'm sure he's not going to make like excuses about it, that, you know, it wasn't his best performance. But it just goes to show that there are lads can have small things wrong with them behind the scenes, and it can give you, I suppose, a bit of perspective when you're, because a lot of people, whether you're supporters, we can nearly all be guilty of it. You can give out about intercounty players that they're not, you know, they're not performing, that they don't do it on a certain day. But I suppose there can be always certain things going on that you just don't know what's happening with lads. So yeah, it just gives you a bit of perspective not to be given out the whole time.
Mm-hmm. So Galway are out, Mayo are through. Mayo are playing Dublin next. We'll get into that, another blockbuster of a match. But first of all, we've got the matter of Cork v Roscommon. Now, this was the first game, I think, of the weekend, and I was watching it. I watched the first half hour of it, and I was like, it's not really, I'm not getting into this at all. Like, Roscommon's possession game, I can kind of get why they did it, because, you know, they're away from home, it quiet the crowd. But they sort of kept the ball for so long without doing much with it, that when Cork finally got a run of things, they were straight back into the game, and then it really burst into life, Stevie. Like, it was a great game.
It was, you know, it was a really exciting game and an exciting finish, you know, and the desperation shown on both teams is what you want from the championship. It was definitely a good game, some great scores and lots of talking points from it. You know, the possession game, it's grand. I can understand about game management and things like that, but sometimes I think it nearly can put a referee against you nearly, where you're sitting holding the ball and the referee and the crowd get a wee bit on edge, and, you know, even a half foul in, the referees are nearly going to say, we'll let it away. They're trying to be too smart with it nearly.
Yeah.
And I feel that you have to have a bit of cut and thrust as well whenever you are trying to manage the game.
Well, I was going to mention it sort of at the end of this review, but I might jump to it now on that point, because it's a good point now. Connor Daly, that sort of half throw weird thing that he did at the end. I don't know, he went to solo it instead, didn't bounce it, and then the referee blew it up and saying that he threw the ball. Could have been a consequence of them just handling the ball so much and popping it to each other and being too nonchalant with it.
It was, because when Roscommon got that last ball, and it's a draw game, Kieran Murta was after levering it up to get that ball, and you're kind of thinking, Cork are in bother here, because Roscommon, they're the experts at this. They know what they're doing. They'll be able to play this around. The clock was ticking. You're thinking, they'll be able to play this around now for the next, you know, they could even take them 2 minutes before. And like they did against Dublin, it was 6 minutes that day. I was thinking, right, Roscommon, they're set up here now and they'll just work this, and you know, they'll get either Enda Smith on the ball, who was on fire, kicked some unbelievable scores. The two Murtas were kicking scores and it just looked set up for them. And then it was right beside Davy Burke, and Conor Daly has the ball, and like, he's, you know, he's one of their most reliable players. He's been there for years. And watching it, I thought, was it two hops that he did there? But it just looked so weird. He was after solo on the ball. And I suppose, as Stevie said, he was in that kind of, that's the way Roscommon play, the kind of, there's no rush in them. It's all really calm, and there's...
It's on their terms.
It's on there, and they're just, you know, they're kind of tipping along. And I'd say he just completely lost focus for about a split second. He didn't know what, he just lost what was happening in the game, kind of trunned the ball up, and then realises, like, what am I doing here? I have to let this down. The ref pulls him. The funny thing is, if the ref didn't pull him, you'd probably be thinking, like, nothing would have been said about this because it was... It
wouldn't even made the show.
Cork would have probably shouted. There'd have been a shout from the crowd and the Cork players might have shouted, but I don't think we'd have been talking about it. And when you look at the rule book, it's a very tough one to clear up because there's not too much written about it because you don't see it too often. And then Cork just got the free, and you know, they broke at pace, as they had been doing all day, in fairness. A little bit similar, their style is a little bit similar to Mayo in that the defenders bomb forward and they're really fast, big, athletic. And it was Ian Maguire, who has just been an unbelievable stalwart for them for many years. He made the break at the very end of the game to go forward with that pace, and he set it up then for the sub, Kevin O'Donovan, who was fresh as a daisy, I suppose, and he popped it over. Roscommon got another chance. Cork nearly butchered it coming out from the kick out down below, but it was devastating for Roscommon because I'd say a minute to go in that game, they're thinking, we have this.
I fully believe that Roscommon would find a way to get over the line. Something Niall mentioned there was just how big and strong the Cork fellas were, and that sort of reminds me, like, when you think of Cork 2010, that Cork team, I think they beat Tyrone in 2009. They were just so powerful, and everyone talked about how athletic they were. It's just something in the genes or something. They've definitely got that back, and a real steeliness about them.
They have. They're going to be a game for anyone. And you know, when you have big, powerful men who can run, they're going to cause serious bother. So they are, you know, and it's a good advantage for kickouts and things like that there, and even for lumping a few high balls in the odd time. So listen, they were very, very impressive. They're dogged, and you know, they just have that, you know, that Cork spirit about them, and it's going to be a tough game for Derry this weekend.
No, it definitely is. And like, it's how do you sum up Roscommon's season then? You know, did they have a good season? Or because it felt like they did throughout most of the year, and you would actually say Cork, even 2 weeks ago, you know, these two teams are in two different levels, they're in two different courses, but now Cork are further than them in the championship. You know, it's strange.
It is strange. I think Roscommon had a good year. They maintained their Division 1 status. You know, they were very impressive in a lot of their games. You know, they had a great result in game Mayo in the championship in Castlebar and tough conditions. And I think, you know, for Davy Burke and for Young McHugh, that they have, you know, potential there to develop on. And I think they can take great heart on it, you know. And when you get to the knockout stage of the championship and you lose by a point, it can go either way, and it can down to that decision maybe a wee bit, which was maybe harsh and whenever we're talking about it here now, but they can take great heart on it. They're definitely a team developing, and if they can find a few more younger players to bleed in next year, that they should be able to build on that.
Yeah, no, they've definitely got a great spirit, because when I found out Brian Hurley wasn't playing, I was like, well, that's probably it then, to be fair, because he's a talisman for them. Stephen Sherlock got his start, he did brilliantly, and then I thought things were definitely going against him when he scored that point, and they give it wide. Obviously there's no hockey outside of Croke Park, but it, you know, they didn't let things like that annoy them or disparage them too much.
No, they didn't, and they had a very slow start to the game. Cork had done absolutely nothing really in the first 25 minutes. Roscommon, with that kind of methodical style that they have, they were controlling the game, I suppose, as they say. But Cork kind of just exploded into life just before half time with the two defenders, and it was Aidan Walsh's brother. I know when he was on the show here earlier in the year, he talked a lot about you know, the preparation that he does with his younger brother, Tommy, and he stepped up and actually had a brilliant game for Cork. But himself and Matty Taylor got two huge scores, and the home crowd, they were so excited, and the place was lit up. from half time. They were roared off the field at half time then. And I suppose the Cork team, they just got encouragement from that. And this is the first time since 2010 that they've beaten two Division One teams in a championship, and they've done it in successive weeks now. So it's great for them, and it was great scenes afterwards. And they will be a tough match for Derry next weekend.
No, absolutely. I always think it's just good for football that Cork are strong, just because of their catchment area and stuff. And it's good for Munster football, and then that helps progression with Kerry and things. And it's just the landscape just looks a lot more healthy when Cork are competitive. And the last game was Kildare versus Monaghan, another Ulster team through, Stevie. Monaghan, impressive.
Yeah, listen, Monaghan are, you know, they're such a dogged team, and they've got so much out of that group of players that they're still given, and they have a few young players now coming through as well. So it's a big result for them. Another closely fought game and a few talking points from it as well. But you have to give credit to Monaghan. They keep coming, and they're continually in the last eight, this last, what, 7 or 8 years in the championship. So, and a few years they were very close to getting to the promised land of an Ireland final for them. So. Good performance, and they'll give it their all, and I'm sure they'll be buoyed too with their minor victory as well, getting the Laren minor final there at the weekend too. So they're in the crest of a wave at the minute, I think.
Yeah, things are really looking good for Monaghan. I think one of the very interesting moves that Vinnie Corey made was moving Conor McCarthy to halfback. It's so strange, because I just remember, to me, he sort of broke onto the scene as a scoring half forward when he got that hat-trick against Donegal, like really landed then. Mm-hmm. And then he was sort of easier to nullify from the half-forward position. So you move him to half-back where he's got the whole game in front of him, and he kicks one too. Do you know, and he's been brilliant all season from that position. Like, would they have had to move you into half-back in the modern game, Stevie?
Oh, if they see me defend, no, they wouldn't. But no, I feel Conor McCarthy, he always had this potential, and a great burst of pace and great feet. But I suppose if you look at Peter Hart there, you know, for years, whenever Tyrone was sort of transitioning through, you know, say it's from 2012 right through to 16-17, you know, Peter was played in the forward lane, and it wasn't his best position. Now that he's back in wing half back, he's playing so much good football his last 3 or 4 years. And I think, you know, Conor McCarthy's probably benefited from that move as well, where he is freed up that wee bit more. He's coming onto the ball with that burst of pace that he has, and he can drive through. And, you know, he has the moves of a forward where he can jink with the ball and carry it at high pace. So he's definitely a big threat from on him now.
No, he is. And, I mean, leadership as well. Now, like, he stood up, and we're going to talk about the controversy surrounding that last point, but the fact that, like, Monaghan looked like, a lot of the players, they didn't want the ball. They didn't know what to do with the ball. When they finally got it to McCarthy, he was like, Jesus, right, I'll do it. You know, and took them on, stuck it over, and drove his team over the line.
I suppose his confidence was up after getting the goal early on. He finished that lovely. Mm-hmm. And he got an unbelievable point a few minutes earlier as well, off the back foot, one that you don't really expect to go over when a lad is shooting like that. It was during the Tyrone game, wasn't it, that he was moved to half back?
Yeah, half time, I think.
Halfway through the game. And In the closing stage of that game, he popped up. He got one or two points himself and set up a few others, just bombing down the field. And Monaghan's half-backs, himself and Carroll O'Connell, like, yeah, you know, you're not going to get... They're probably Monaghan's two best attacking threats right now, the way these boys have lightning pace. Carroll O'Connell is playing like he's 27, like he's the pace of the man. And I know he was a sprinter.
He must have got a bike
when he was younger. He must have got a bike or something. Yeah, but the two of them are just playing unbelievable stuff, because Monaghan don't really have, like, when you've McCarron and at times McManus inside, they don't really have the movement inside that you're going to be kicking into the whole time. So it's all based off running, and I suppose Darren Hughes does a bit of it too, but it comes back to McCarthy. Stephen O'Hanlon, I suppose, in the half forward lane, he's very good, and he's so good on the ball and so good to break lines that he can set up McCarthy and O'Connell and send them flying through. And the two lads are just, they're a joy to watch, really, with the speed they can cut through. Because you know the way when you're watching Roscommon and they're dithering and they're kind of waiting a bit outside, it's just tough to watch. And it's not even criticising Roscommon, but I love watching Carroll O'Connell and Conor McCarthy just going straight for the juggler. And that was what McCarthy did for that last point, where he just went straight down the middle and cut it off the outside of the boot. Absolutely lovely.
Mm-hmm. No, and then there's the argument too that point maybe shouldn't have stood. I think it was Sean Jones had the ball.
Sean Jones got the called for the mark.
Yeah, he called for a mark. Mark wasn't awarded, but he was standing there with his hand up for 2-3 seconds, and then he's like, "Uh-oh," and then he continued to play on. Definitely over 4 seconds, 4 steps, whatever way you want to call it. Ball got to Conor McCarthy, went over the bar. Glenn Ryan, livid, says afterwards that the referee was completely out of his depth. They'd been very critical of him actually the whole match, because he was meant to have been a poor performance for both teams. And then, you know, we talked earlier about the decision with Conor Daly and the Roscommon. Are referees struggling with the modern game? You know, are they being left out to dry? Are they just not up to the standard?
Everybody can make a mistake. And it's not to hang out referees or anything. They're trying their best. And I do feel, you know, that you hear Peter Canavan, these men on RT and that, chatting about now getting refs made up. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. And I think, you know, it'll stop the crying and whinging from players at referees. And it'll let the general public know the type of pressures that the players and the referees are under. I think it'll improve the language as well, because nobody obviously wants to be on national TV shouting and roaring abuse.
Yeah.
And I think whenever the referees are trained up on explaining the rules, why you're giving decisions, suddenly that's fair enough. And if I held my hand in there too long, I'm going to do a better job in my defensive work the next time. And I feel referees should be mic'd up so that everybody knows exactly what's going on. If they make a mistake, it's the same as a player. You know, you get on with it and you play on. I feel the mark, the inside mark. I don't mind the midfield mark. I feel the inside mark is a terrible rule. I feel it slows the game up. It stops the stuff that you want to see. It stops. You know, one of our good balls been put into a forward and you want to see him taking on his man and trying to swing a point. You know, this handy mark going up and getting a free kick at it. I don't want to go and watch games decided on free kicks. I want to go and see real good players having a cut at their defender. It takes away too from the defensive point of view where a forward's taking a man on and the defender maybe takes away that chance of getting a diving block or a brilliant tackle. And I just feel the inside mark, it's not productive for Gaelic football. I think it's more, you know, your Aussie rules stuff, and I think we've lost enough players to the Aussie rules without encouraging it in our own game.
Well, the mark from the 45, like that one Sean Jones was going for, that was a 7 metre pass, I'd say.
Yeah.
And he's standing, it was even a bit of a mad decision to try and take the mark from there. But those ones are terrible altogether, where it's just a free kick. But you're not a fan of even the inside one, like in the full forward line either?
No, definitely not. And, you know, I just feel that, you know, Big Tierney got one and again Galway and he had a chance of goal, you know, have a swing at it and have a cut and see what comes of it, you know, instead of just taking a 14-yard free kick. I just feel that, you know, are you going to pay your money to go and watch a game and watch players having a 14-yard free kick? No, you want to see a man taking a man on and driving past him and trying to finish it. And I just don't think it slows the game up, and it's just not for me.
It would change the mindset of forwards as well coming into it. Like, I've even seen Conn O'Callaghan at times, and you see him win a ball inside and you're just dying to see this lad take someone on, and then it's take the mark.
Especially somebody like him who is so explosive and hard to handle. You know, it's whenever he takes that mark, I would say the Dublin supporters are frustrated, because he's one of the best men at taking somebody on and having a cut at goal. Like, he's just a goal machine. Like, he's your typical man who's that ice coldness about him, and he'll sell the goalkeeper the dummy or give him the eyes, and it doesn't matter how many men are on him. Mm-hmm. So for me, inside mark, I don't think is working. I would love to see it get rid of and just go back to the old way. And I don't even think there's many teams using it or coaching it. And if they are, it's not the top teams that I see using it anyway. You know,
yeah.
Kerry's going to be they're going to be swinging it on the good ball bouncing on front of David Clifford at the weekend. And you know, I just feel it's a cop out.
Yeah, you can sort of feel Clifford doesn't even really try to take too much advantage of it. I suppose he did in the All Ireland final on some occasions. But only when he was already jumping to win a ball and he knew he was going to end up on the ground where he wouldn't have a running start. But he knew if he catches the ball landing on his feet, he's going. Because he, you know, I'm sure he backs himself to beat anyone.
Yeah, and to me, that's a way out. You know, if a defensive team are defending well and they get two or three men, you know, the ball's played under David Clifford and he catches it and the defensive team get two or three men around him, that's good defensive play. You have to give him credit for that. So it's up to David Clifford then to get it chipped out and bring maybe a runner on the play or something else. So no, I don't like the inside mark, and I would love to see it got rid of.
Yeah, no, like you said, and there's so many rules for the referees to try and follow and to keep up with, and they're forever changing, and trying to keep up all the lines. I mean, I think an extra referee would nearly probably do if you give them a zone each or something.
I think that it's a simple game. Way overcomplicated. Just keep it nice and simple. And you know, this chopping and changing, I don't think there's another sport in the world that changes its rules every 2 or 3 years so much as Gaelic football. And I can't understand why, because I think the game's so healthy. I think the skill levels are good. The whole tactical thing now with goalkeepers and kickouts and players coming out and keeper sweepers, I love all that. And I think it... You know, it's an attractive game, so without chopping and changing rules.
That's interesting, because I don't know, you're a sharpshooter, obviously, like a flair player, people would see you as. So I think people would assume that you're a purist and a traditionalist in that, you know, it's 15-15, we want to see loads of kicking the ball in, but you don't mind the other elements of the game as well, that, you know, where they're footballers and you're not just a forward, you're a footballer, you got to track back, you got to do all that as well, and the defenders chip in with scores as well.
I know. I definitely agree on that. I think everybody should be a good kicker of the ball. You know, when you look at the drone team or the carry team, you look at all those defenders that play for those teams, them men are all comfortable kicking the ball 25, 30 yards, and they'll play. It's up to the defenders and the half forwards, the midfielders, half backs, to play those good balls into their inside lane. And I think all those top teams have the tools to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just moving on quickly to the draw. I'm not going to talk anymore about Tyrone v Kerry because I'll just lose the run of myself. Mayo v Dublin, it's obviously the big one, a huge one even. I mean, do you think Mayo are actually at an advantage? I know they've got the extra game and stuff, but you can't say they're definitely not going to come into this game cold.
Definitely not. This is it's a massive, massive game. Looking forward to this one too, so am. You know, you just don't know what Mayo's going to bring on the day. Them and Dublin, it just brings the best out of each other. I feel Dublin, whoever beats Dublin this year will win All Ireland. I think Conor Callan, you know, not having him against Kerry last year was a massive blow, because he is just the cutting edge for, you know, just he is the razor blade that cuts through teams, and he's a massive loss to that Dublin team. So I feel that he's back, he's on form. I feel they have so many strong players around him. You know, I think Brian Fenton's just the best midfielder in the country. He's just a joy to watch, the way he passes the ball, and if you look, every pass is forward, and I think this is going to be a real big test, and I think Mayo will, after getting a big one over their rivals, will really put it up to Dublin.
Mm-hmm. And then Derry v Cork is the other draw. Derry are obviously going to go into this game favourites, and deservedly so. You know, they've been fantastic all season. Players like Shane McGuigan, their outrageous, you know, system of play where everyone gets forward, Orrin Lynch getting involved and scores. They're a handful, and I think they'll really do something this year. But as you mentioned earlier, Cork are more than capable of causing an upset.
They definitely are, and I suppose they'll have to come up with what to do with Orrin Lynch, you know, because he's obviously kicking a few points, and he's probably one of the most improved players. You know, you consider him last year against Galway in that semi-final where, you know, he coughed up a couple of easy chances and he took shots that weren't on and things like that. He has really improved, and he's been a big advantage to Derry attacking-wise as well. So I think it's a big game. Derry have been the form team probably throughout the whole season as well. So, you know, are they coming now maybe where they're maybe tiring off a wee bit? I don't know, but... It's an interesting game how both teams will set up and how both teams will perform, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. And then just lastly, Armagh v Monaghan, which is sort of a strange draw in the sense that they'll probably both be delighted with it. You know, but out of all the draws they could get, like, that's another Ulster game. They're familiar with each other.
Well, if you look at the four big teams, the four big names, yeah. You're Mayo and Dublin, Kerry, Tyrone. You know, the other four teams will probably be happy enough with what they've got. And Armagh, Monaghan, and Ulster Derby. You know, if you were told any of them two teams that they were playing each other getting an Ireland semi final, they would have snapped your arm off nearly at the start of the year. So it's a massive prize at the end of that game, and there'll be no love lost between any of them two counties, and it's, you know, it's going to be a real tough battle, and it'll be interesting to see who can come out on top. Armagh, after their impressive one against Galway, will be, I think, a wee bit maybe ahead, and I think maybe Monaghan just maybe might tire a wee bit, but listen, it's all there to play for.
Yeah, we'll just quickly run up the Tailteann Cup. Meath beat Antrim in what was a good game. Antrim put a good accord of themselves. Down scored a ridiculous 8 goals against Laois. Liam Kerr scored a hat-trick. Have you ever got a hat-trick before?
Never.
Never, not even club or nothing?
No.
There you go. Liam Kerr, he'll be on the show next, hopefully. Thank you very much, Stevie, for joining us. We'll be back soon with Niall McIntyre in the hurling. Welcome back. It's time to get stuck into the hurling, although I've got a dejected Niall with me here. Not exactly the result you wanted between Galway and Tipperary. You were at the game?
I was, Lee. I went down to the Gaelic grounds on Saturday, full of hope and full of expectation for Tipperary. And I don't think it was without reason. They had a decent championship campaign, played well against Limerick, played well against Cork, and you were hoping that Waterford game was just a blip. But as it turned out, it was the blip that has cost Tipperary their season, really, because the same, I suppose, flaws, and you were thinking that day that it might have been just a mindset thing with Tipperary, that they were as good as true anyway. You were thinking it was a mindset thing, that they'd be able to switch this on now for Galway, local rivals, a huge rivalry there. But it was the same again. You have to give a lot of credit to Galway on that. And Henry talked after the game. He talked about Galway's intention to turn this into a bit of a battle. And that was what they did. As a Tipperary person, I was frustrated at Tipperary from the back, that they were hitting long balls in on top of the forwards who aren't really great fans of these long balls, and long balls that you just, seeing them coming down, you just never thought that Mark Keogh, Seamus Callan, Jake Morris, that they're not fans of it, didn't think they were going to win them. And the Galway defenders gobbled them up. The Galway defenders, all of them were on top. Jack Grealish, Gerald McInerney, a great survivor, that Galway team. You always think he's under pressure, but he just always survives. Darren Morrissey was brilliant. Doughty Burke, as good as ever. And I suppose that was where the game was won for Galway. Cathal Mannion was sweeping, and he's just an incredible hurler. And when he's sweeping and he has that amount of space, it's just unbelievable the things he can do. He put one pass into Joseph Cooney's hand from the far side of the field. It was just unbelievable, really. At the same time, Galway, how they didn't win this game by 10 or 12 points, I don't really know. Conor Whelan missed goal chances that he would never miss in the first half. And Galway could have been out of sight at half time. They could have even been out of sight in the second half, because Tipperary just never, ever got going. So definitely very disappointing for Tipperary to finish up like this. And I suppose Galway, as Tipperary people were kind of saying, you know, Galway haven't changed much since that team that won the All-Ireland. They haven't that many young lads in. But it was the likes of Jack Grealish, Darren Morrissey stepped up, and Tom Monaghan. I know Conor Whelan got man of the match, and he was brilliant, but it's not often a sub gets man of the match, but Tom Monaghan could easily have got it, because he did not put a foot wrong and scored three huge points down the stretch to win it for Galway. And you just have to praise them. They deserve their win, as hard as it is to say it.
Yeah, and you have to praise Conor Whelan, the one-trick pony. Is that too much? Two man of the matches in a row. Maybe that's the one trick. He wins man of the matches.
Yeah, it's a good trick. Two man of the matches in a row. Like Conor Whelan, he was unbelievable today against Kilkenny. I don't think he hit the same standard. It was just how open Tipperary were. And Kyle Barrett was isolated on him at times. Michael Breen was isolated on him. And they just weren't able for him. Conor Whelan could have had two more goals. Shelley made a good save from him. He dropped another one. Scored the third one. But yeah, Whelan deadly. Tom Monaghan came on, was very good, and they were the two main men. Joseph Cooney, Cathal Mannion were very good as well. Pádraic Mannion, after his heartbreak in that Leinster final, he was good as well. So a deserved win for Galway, and they're heading on to the semi final, a repeat of last year's semi finals, Galway against Limerick. And Galway will be full of... This was a huge win. It was a huge win for Henry Shefflin, because if they'd lost, you know, you'd have been kind of thinking, are Galway going anywhere? Like,
after the way they lost the final.
The way they lost the final. And Henry said it, like, they were, you know, they were devastated. And obviously they were devastated after that, the way it happened. But they picked themselves up. They picked themselves up well. And, you know, they were 100% deserving of their win. And they just seemed to have a... They have an Indian sign over Tipperary at the minute, and Tipperary just they'll be devastated because they never showed up. I looked out at the field straight after the final whistle, and Liam Cahill was just making a beeline down the tunnel, like a man that was, you know, he was raging, and I'd say he didn't know what went wrong.
No, absolutely. And then another team that had to come back from disappointment was Clare. Lost the Munster final at Limerick in very dramatic circumstances, although that seems like common practice now, especially with them. But they bounced back against Dublin.
They did, and I suppose it was similar enough to last year. Having lost the Munster final, Clare went in last year and they scraped over Wexford really in this quarter final. And I suppose, you know, they've been forewarned this time that we have to lift it again and we can't be too down about this Limerick game. I know last year was probably more heartbreaking that it went all the way to extra time and more physically taxing as well. That game was unbelievable last year. But Clare were brilliant, and they weren't did a little bit of a slow start. Like Dublin were leading after 19 minutes, and Dublin looked lively. Paul Crummy was going very well inside. Keane O'Sullivan was lightning inside, and Danny Sutcliffe, I think he could be one of the best ball winners in hurling at the minute. And it was obviously very disappointing for Clare to lose John Conlon. He got an awful blow for concussion, and there was a lot of worry about him when he lay down flat on his back. But it was one of the most unbelievable catches you'd ever see that actually knocked him down from Danny Sutcliffe. He does this thing where he goes up and catches with his opposite hand, with the right hand, and he just switches holding hands of the hurl as he's going up in the air, which is an unbelievable skill, and he's one of the best at it. But Dublin, they were trying to play the right way. They were trying to work the ball up the field the way Micheál Donoghue would have often done it with Galway when he was there. But they fumbled it too much, and they lost too many balls broke down for them, and it ended up in an 18-point defeat. And like the game was, it was over really at halftime when Clare got those two quick goals. Like there were certain positive signs for Dublin, and like you have to mention the injury to Donal Burke. He came into the game as an injury doubt with the hamstring the last day. I know he wasn't 100% against Carlow, and he was gone after after 5 minutes here, which is, you know, it's a killer blow to lose your key man like that. So, you know, as weird as it sounds, while it was an 18-point defeat, there were certain positive signs for Dublin, and you have to remember as well that they're missing Keane O'Callaghan, they're missing Chris Crummy, missing Ryan McBride, key players from the team from last year. So, but on the other hand, Clare were absolutely deadly, and while we mentioned last year, they were a little bit off the pace, and they never picked that up. And Kilkenny punished them in that semi-final last year. Clare were a different team here on Saturday. Mark Rogers, he exemplified it, scored 111, most of it from play. Tony Kelly on fire. I probably would have given the man of the match to Rogers, because I thought his scores were nearly more exceptional himself, in that he carved them out himself. But Dave Fitzgerald, brilliant as well. And Clare, they'll go into this, they know what happened last year against Kilkenny, and they'll go in this year, and you know they'll be so fired up after getting hammered by Kilkenny last year, and it should set up two good All Ireland semi-finals, and it's the same pairings again. So you have to give credit to those four teams; they're the best in the land right now.
No, absolutely, and Clare do seem like they're going to be in a better place to attack this All Ireland than they were last year. That's all we have time for today. Thank you so much, Niall, for giving us the lay of the land in the world of hurling. Thank you, Stevie O'Neill, for coming into studios, and thank you to our friend Sure 72-Hour Protection, and we'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Sure. 72-hour non-stop protection, tested to the limits. Sure, it won't let you down.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.